This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
China. We do talk about it a lot now. Credit to President Donald Trump for bringing China into everyone's mind as something we should care about, worry about, a problem we should address. And I tell you, I've been seeing something a lot lately. I've talked to you about it quite a few times on the show. I see a big problem coming. And this is what I mean when I say a big problem. We have all these guests on, all these experts. We have great experts tonight on China. What are we looking at? What are they doing? Why are they doing this? So on and so forth. And when they come on, they talk about all the things China is involved in. So think about this for a second. Think about all the things China is involved in. Let's just focus on America. Okay, what are they doing here? On top of buying up mass quantities of land and things like that, they are of a massive, massive spying operation going on within the borders of the United States of America. It doesn't take long. It would take you 5 seconds on an internet search to come up with this Chinese spy arrested, this Chinese spy arrested. They were driving Senator Feinstein around. They had Eric Swalwell, but they're on college universities with these Confucius Institutes. Remember, we had to basically shut down an embassy, a Chinese embassy in Houston, Texas, down here where I live. They have infiltrated this country from coast to coast. Well, yes, that's bad, but there's something else to that. That's expensive. Intelligence operations are expensive. Okay, so that's very expensive. All right, well, that's expensive. Now let's go to China. What are they doing right now currently? You're seeing protest after protest after protest break out now. You're seeing people throwing rocks and things like that. And you're seeing Chinese police beating people up, hauling people off to quarantine camps. Why are we having these protests? Because China is still locking down huge portions of its economy. Well, we know, sadly, here in America, just how damaging lockdowns can be for an economy. China's still doing it. Okay, so they're paying a fortune for spying, infiltrating America. They're killing the goose that laid the golden egg with their own economy. And they're doing something else. They are spending a fortune overseas with an initiative that is designed to bring other countries around the world into the Chinese fold and out of the American fold. China is spending vast quantities of money in places like Africa, in countries that have critical rare materials that China wants, and China is buying influence in those companies. Hey, we'll give you this, we'll build your roads, we'll build you this, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do that. Okay, well, that costs a lot of money too. So you're killing your economy, you're spending money on spying, you're spending money on influence, and then let's get to the last thing, the military. Militaries are shockingly expensive. Have you ever seen one of those pie charts of the United States budget, the budget of this country? Because we always, we hear about these bills, this $1 trillion bill, and that $1 trillion bill, and you get so lost in all the money we send everywhere because it's such an absurd, obscene amount of money, way more than we have, way more than we should be spending. But you look at these pie charts, and the military portion is a big slice of pie. You got Medicare, Social Security, and military. It is a big slice of pie. Military campaigns, militaries themselves, standing armies, are hugely expensive. Throughout history, it has simply been a known fact that if you have a large military buildup, it can and will bankrupt your nation, unless you're basically conquering other nations and taking their wealth in for yourself. Well, on top of everything else, China's doing a massive military buildup. how are they not collapsing on themselves financially already? We're going to ask the guests about that. Because here's a little history. This is a little brief history of China. This is the 30,000-foot view version. China, as you know, was ruled by dynasties for the longest time. I mean, the Ming dynasty, like you would know a lot of these names just off the top of your head if I started going through all these dynasties. There's so much history, and actually really cool history in China. Well, eventually those dynasties, for various reasons, broke up, fell off, went away, and China was kind of ruled by, frankly, warlords for a long period of time. This guy who had the most guns and most guys would control this territory, and this guy would control this territory. And eventually, China became a divided nation. This is prior to World War II. They became a divided nation. The communists were fighting against the nationalists. The nationalists would be the ones that you would agree with more. And they were having this huge civil war. And then, time is funny, Japan decides to invade China. Japan, this is all prior to World War II, basically the start of World War II, they do this huge military invasion of China. They're in Manchuria, they're in Shanghai, they're dropping planes, bombs, killing Chinese people all over the place. Well, the nationalists and communists were busy fighting each other. The Japanese came in, and then what happened? Well, the nationalists and communists decided to join forces in order to get rid of Japan. Hey, well, we'll take up our fight once we get Japan out of the country. But remember, American communists aren't the only ones who don't feel any sense of loyalty to their country. They frankly want to destroy the country. That's how communists are. Communists don't believe in loyalty to any nation at all. They really don't believe in loyalty to anything. They believe in power. They believe in destruction. So the nationalists and communists, they came together to fight against the Japanese, but Mao was no dummy. Mao said, oh yeah, yeah, we're definitely on the same team. Won't fight you anymore. Hey, nationalists, there's a big Japanese army over there. You guys should definitely go fight them. We'll be over here doing some other stuff. Go fight them. And the nationalists had to bear the brunt of the war against Japan within the borders of China. So when the war was finally over, World War II, when the communists and nationalists decided to take up the fight once again, the nationalists found themselves broken, lacking manpower, lacking the weapons needed, and the communists mopped them up. 1949 rolls around, and the communists have taken over China. Okay, well, that's really bad. It certainly was bad for the 40 to 50 to 60 million Chinese people Mao and the communists murdered in the coming decades. Eventually, China got to the point that the Soviet Union got to when it collapsed. Eventually, China got to the point and realized, okay, this communist, this pure communism stuff is insane. It simply doesn't work. Everyone's dying here. We have no money. What we need is not to have freedom. We need to basically merge communism with kind of a capitalist system, almost a managed capitalism, which I know is the opposite of what capitalism is, but that's what China decided to do, which brings us to the United States of America and where we are today. You see, America, in a now horrible, fateful decision, decided that, hey, they want to be a little less commie. We should help them. Let's help these Chinese communists. Let's help them learn about the greatness of capitalism and get them on their feet. And we began to work hand in hand with China. And we began to build their economy for them. We began to ship all of our manufacturing to China, encouraging others around the world to do the same. Only China never became our friend. China was always our enemy, and China had always intended to take us down. That was their stated goal. And now we get to the place where we are now, where we are in our own fiscal crisis that is about to get a whole lot worse. And China is looking like they just might end up being quite desperate with what's going on over there. They have the lockdown protests and everything else. So what do you need if you're a desperate nation that's maybe hurting financially? You need other nations. You need to do some conquest. And China's looking over at Taiwan, licking their chops, and Joe Biden's busy telling the world that we'll step in and defend them.
That we are not going to step back. We are not going to change any of our views.
So are you saying that the United States would come to Taiwan's defense if China attacked?
Yes, we have a commitment to do that.
That's not good, is it? So we have a desperate nuclear power aimed at conquest right now. We have a president of the United States of America, dementia-addled, who says we will put American troops in harm's way to stop that from happening. A bit of a dangerous situation, no? You're starting to understand why the collapse of China is a big, big, big deal. As they break up, they get more dangerous, not less dangerous. And we're going to talk to Stephen Yates about that next.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
That doesn't look good. Joining me now, Stephen Yates, former Deputy National Security Advisor. Stephen, obviously, as you know, those are the protests happening. We think they're still happening in China right now. Can you help me understand how widespread this is? Is the government going to collapse? Is this still going on? Was this a one-off thing? And why are they mad?
Well, they're mad for, I think, a lot of justifiable reasons. First and foremost, this is a generation of young people, whether they're students or workers who might be approaching middle age, who are supposed to be enjoying China's peaceful rise, engagement with the world, getting wealthier, getting better jobs, building a better future. That's what was promised to them. That's why they gave up their civil liberties in exchange for that social compact. But this year in particular, there have been just ferocious lockdowns that have shut down the economy, shut down entire buildings and cities, and people just had gotten to a breaking point. So the demonstrations, I think, we've seen act one of a play that we are not privileged enough to know how many acts there will be. The demonstrators knew that if they stayed out too long, the government would mow them down, just like happened at Tiananmen Square. And the government is looking at putting a lot of those demonstrators in maybe some of those quarantine villages, which make for better isolation and fewer news clips of the people being cracked down upon. So I think we're in a tug of war that is definitely not over, but it's not going to be like one of the color revolutions we saw in the European context.
Stephen, can you help me understand this? Because China does not have, well, the Chinese government, I mean, they don't have regard for human life, as all communist governments don't. They just don't. It's not something that they wrestle with the way we probably do more in the West. And certainly not the lives of their own people. They'll throw them away by the million in China. So why would they lock down? They know it hurts the economy. They don't care if COVID tears through and kills a bunch of old people. China's smart enough to know it's old people who are dying and fat people. I can't make sense of why they'd wreck their own economy when they don't care about the lives of their citizens anyway. Is this a cover for something?
Well, there's always a logical possibility that they know something about the virus or another virus that is on the loose that we don't. After all, China is not known for quality control, not known for keeping things safe, and not known for telling the truth if there's been a little boo-boo at a lab. And so it could be that they know something we don't. It also could be that they're just rigid Marxist-Leninist Maoists that once they start heading in a particular direction, they can't really even make themselves stop. And they locked in on this COVID zero policy. And so that's just the way it's going to be. And you and I both know that COVID policy isn't really about health. It's about social engineering and control. And they're definitely all in with this maximalist control option. And so they can still flex on surveilling people, surveilling their communications, and controlling them, and it helps them avoid a majority of the Chinese people realizing that they don't need to make this sacrifice. There's a better social compact out there, and the Communist Party are a bunch of losers that have been doing terrible things to them for all these years. So that's what they're guarding against. The slow cooking of the frog is continuing to work for them.
How solid is Xi Jinping's power in China? I know he's now the ruler of the Communist Party there. I realize that. But lots of times in these countries like Russia, for example, there's always a faction out there that could pop up at any minute. Is there a faction out there in China, or is it pretty much just all him?
He's pretty much isolated all of the top layers of the party and state government as his people. The faction that he could lose are the common people, which are very, very numerous. And if they ever come to the point where they feel like the threat of force against them is manageable or lesser than the threat of force they can impose upon these leaders, very little is going to change by way of leadership. Xi's personal safety could be at risk. His reputation should be at risk. But the actual effort to remove him, I think, is not something that is in the near term. And it's one of those things that could change very, very quickly in China if the supposed mandate of heaven kind of is lifted, where people no longer think the Communist Party is leading to a better life for them. Then the traditional Chinese mantra of change in order to revive that mandate comes into play. But we aren't there yet.
Yeah. You're in charge until you're not. All right. Well, the good news is we're helping people out, at least according to Secretary of State Blinken. Here's what he had to say.
Now, I know the U.S. supports the rights of all people to protest, but specifically on these zero COVID protesters in China, does the Biden administration support the protesters in China?
Of course we do. We support the right of people everywhere, whether it's in China, whether it's Iran, whether it's anyplace else, to protest peacefully, to make known their views, to vent their frustrations. And as that's repressed in one way or another in any given country, we speak out against it, we stand up against it, and we take action against it.
That's exciting news. I didn't know we'd taken action on their behalf. Stephen, what have we done on their behalf?
Yeah, I can't say that I've witnessed any of the evidence of this action he speaks of. We couldn't even really get a statement out of the White House, much less any action anywhere that would make a difference. And really, the most important action, the most strategically significant action during the demonstration was this supposed update to the Apple AirDrop function that had a meaningful impact on the communications of the demonstrators. So I don't know the U.S. government is claiming a role in that, turning it off or turning it on, but really no action taken so far that makes any difference in what's playing out in China right now. And they don't support the protests of the lockdowns because their party and their supporters advocated similar lockdowns and still advocate different lockdowns.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, the good news is we're going to defend Taiwan. Maybe. Here's Joe Biden.
But would U.S. forces defend the island?
Yes, if in fact there was an unprecedented attack.
After our interview, a White House official told us U.S. policy has not changed. Officially, the U.S. will not say whether American forces would defend Taiwan. But the commander-in-chief had a view of his own.
So unlike Ukraine, to be clear, sir, U.S. forces, U.S. men and women, would defend Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion?
Yes.
Stephen, I'm so confused. Maybe not as confused as Joe, but I'm so lost. Okay, so we have a policy, but no one knows what our policy really is. But Joe Biden said this is our policy, but they disagreed that this is our policy. What's our policy?
Yeah, well, it's a truly sad state of affairs because we only get one commander-in-chief at a time. Under normal circumstances, when a commander-in-chief speaks, his staff in the White House really is only allowed to support what the commander-in-chief says or leave in protest. And so I don't know how that White House official is still employed other than to draw the conclusion that the president isn't running the White House, someone else is. And that's why that person remains employed. But this muddling of what our effort would be with regard to Taiwan, separate from what our policy should be, this is the absolute worst way to talk about it. It's demoralizing to Taiwan. Why should it take risks if it doesn't know that the U.S. is going to stand there and at least have its back. The United States should be urging Japan to do more and stepping into the fray. But if it can't even get one voice out of the White House, how can we convince allies to take risks on this? So this is just a giant green light to China. It's very, very sad. At the very least, the United States should be selling whatever arms Taiwan has a capacity to buy at this point. They, unlike some other countries, they don't take weapons as a gift. They buy them from us, and they can use them for their own self-defense, whether we intervene or not.
Stephen Yates, thank you so much, sir. I appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jesse.
All right. We'll be back.
I'm wondering, what is the president's reaction when he hears protesters in China chant freedom or Xi Jinping step down?
The president's not going to speak for protesters around the world. They're speaking for themselves.
Bold. Joining me now, Gordon Chang, author of the book, The Coming Collapse of China. It is odd that the once land of the free United States of America really doesn't have anything strong to say about political protests going on in China. Odd, wouldn't you say, Gordon?
Extremely odd. You know, John Kirby was so dispiriting because when the United States doesn't stand for democracy and freedom, nobody will. And it's not just the issue of China, because people around the world heard Kirby speak those words. And that, unfortunately, is going to, I think, show the United States not to be full-throated in support of its value. That's America. And when Americans don't support their values, for instance, the Chinese notice and they press the advantage. So this has a direct consequence for us.
Gordon, you wrote The Coming Collapse of China. Now, I marvel at this all the time. I talk about this a lot. I've talked about it on this show. When you consider their investments in other countries, the money it takes to have influence around the world, I mean, they fund so much of the stuff you see here in America, and plus they're locking down their economy. I don't understand how they're still standing. They have to be in a dire financial situation, right?
Yeah, I believe the Chinese economy is not growing. It's certainly not growing at the numbers reported. More important, the property sector is plunging. Both sales and prices are down by double digits. And that's an indication that the rest of the economy is not doing as well as it's been explained to the Chinese people. And this, of course, has a real implication because Xi Jinping, he's supposed to deliver prosperity. And when he can't do that, really the only way he can stay in power is after all going after some foreign country, Taiwan, Japan, India, the Philippines, the United States. And so we could be the victim of all of this.
What do you mean going after the United States? How is it going to come after us?
Well, for instance, Chinese ships and planes challenge ours in the global commons, and some of those incidents have been quite dangerous. So these are times where American pilots, American sailors have been able to successfully navigate away. But we got to remember what happened in April 2001 when a Chinese fighter clipped the wing of an unarmed Navy reconnaissance plane in international airspace over the South China Sea. You know, our plane was forced to land. The Chinese stripped it. They imprisoned our crew. This was one of the most humiliating incidents in American history. It should never happen again. But what we did was we taught the Chinese to be aggressive in the international airspace. And that has been a problem ever since.
Gordon, can you explain, as we look at the protests today, can you explain Tiananmen Square? A lot of Americans, even though it's not that long ago, have kind of forgotten it, or all they know is that one picture you see online of that brave soul standing in front of a Chinese tank. What were they about? What happened?
Yeah, in the spring of 1989, Chinese people were actually, you know, the economy was robust, but there was a lot of inflation, and that meant that there was a lot of economic discontent. And the Chinese people used the passing of Hu Yaobang, a communist leader, as an excuse to, quote unquote, mourn. There were protests in about 370 Chinese cities, including the capital. on the night of June 3rd and 4th in Beijing, Deng Xiaoping, the Chinese leader, unleashed the Chinese army, killed, we don't know how many, but perhaps 3,000 or 4,000 people. These were murders. But we got to remember that, you know, and people compare the protests that we have just witnessed after the fire in Urumqi to Tiananmen. But in Tiananmen, you know, and in 1989, those protesters, they weren't saying, you know, let's get rid of the Communist Party. They just wanted the Communist Party to open up. This time, however, Jesse, immediately after that fire, you heard people across China shout, look, down with Xi Jinping, down with the Communist Party. So we now have a revolutionary mood among the Chinese people.
Gordon, I know it's very difficult to say because, they censor so many things and they lie about so many things, but you have a better sense of what's going on in that country than anyone I've ever talked to. Do you think this movement has potential? We never know, but has potential to get really, really large? There are a lot of people in China. If enough of them are angry, that's going to be a problem.
Yes, and I think that we will see continuing protests. And the reason is, after that fire on November 24th, we saw protests across China, north and south, east and west, across the major universities. There was no organization. There were no leaders. There was no coordination. The reason those protests sprung up spontaneously was because people across China felt the same way. So they reacted the same way. And that means we could see this again, because the people right now are unhappy. I mean, there's not only the economic problems that you referred to, but there's just also just discontent with Chinese communist rule. So there will be an unstable China going forward. And I think this will remain unstable until the Communist Party is overthrown.
Gordon, tell me about India and their relationship with China. I was actually thinking about this last night. We never hear about India. They're never in the news. This gigantic country, an economic powerhouse, all kinds of tensions with them and other nations around them. And it's like they don't even exist. What's up with India and China?
Well, Chinese troops are now deep in Indian-controlled territory in Ladakh, which is high in the Himalayas. They've been there since May of 2020. And on the night of June 15th of that year, in a surprise attack, China killed 20 Indian troopers. And so that has changed India's relationship with China. China immediately started to ban TikTok and other Chinese apps. They canceled Chinese contracts. Prime Minister Modi had made it very clear that India will defend itself. And since that time, they have moved reinforcements into the Himalayas. They're building the infrastructure for war. And the Chinese and the Indian troops remain very close together across a very tense line, which has been negotiated recently.
Oof, couldn't imagine being on post in the Himalayas. How is India militarily?
India is actually quite strong, and it's getting stronger quickly. And the reason is because they have been attacked by China, but also because India is growing, its economy is strong, and they can afford to remilitarize, which is exactly what they're doing. In the very first years of the Indian Republic, Indian leaders tried to get along with China. That's not true anymore. You know, Prime Minister Modi really believes that the Indian Republic has got to defend itself. And he's been pouring a lot of resources into that because it's not just Ladakh, it's across the Himalayas. And it's also a hotspot which we haven't heard from in a long time, but which we may soon, and that is Kashmir.
Why? What's going on in Kashmir?
In Kashmir, there is a territorial dispute between India and China. It's flared up occasionally, sometimes going into full-blown war. But China has been supporting Pakistan there. And things have been heating up recently. So if history repeats, which is not 100%, but if history repeats, there could very well be increased clashes, maybe even a full-blown conflict.
Gordon Chang, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Jesse. I really appreciate it.
All right. These are problems, right? We admit there's a problem with China, but there's a big problem with how intertwined we are with China, their economy, our economy. We've spent so many decades, sadly, being married, How do we get a divorce? How embedded are they? Talk about that next.
Do you support the Chinese people's right to protest? Do you have any reaction to the factory workers that were beaten and detained for protesting COVID lockdowns? Do you regret restricting airdrop access that protesters used to evade surveillance from the Chinese government? Do you think it's problematic to do business with the Communist Chinese Party when they suppress human rights?
Not the best look in the world. Joining me now, my friend, former congressman, and current dean of business at the Great Liberty University, Dave Bratt. Congressman, okay, obviously not a great look for Tim Cook. I about called him Tim Apple. I about called him Tim Apple. The same way Trump did. Remember when Trump called him Tim Apple? I almost just called him Tim Apple on the show. All right, for Tim Cook, it's not a great look, but he's sadly not alone. Can you explain? Yeah. Just you take it away, Dean. Can you explain how in the world we allowed so much of American industry to get so in bed with our enemy?
Yeah. Well. Maybe three big reasons. First reason, they got 1.4 billion customers. That's a big deal. Second reason, they got a $15 trillion economy that was growing at 8 or 9%. Now they're cracking up, right? If you haven't followed that out there, go to YouTube and just Google China economic disaster. And it's shocking what's going on. I could spend a half hour on that one. And then three, the first two wouldn't matter if you had any moral fiber in this country anymore. But the CEO, that clip you showed, is just ice. It's just ice in the veins. The Judeo-Christian tradition, the warmth, the love of humanity. The liberals are no longer liberal. You used to count on the Kennedys or the liberals to step up on this kind of thing. The leftists are just all on Marxists right now. And I mean, we're just scratching the surface, right? The 1999 document called Unrestricted Warfare, the Chinese laid out, they're at war with us back in 99. None of this is a mystery. Google, et cetera, have been caught red-handed helping out the Chinese run elections and spread disinformation. The Chinese funding has pervaded everything, right? The State Department, U.S. universities, right on down. So, but the big three is just our U.S. self-interest, like you said, and our CEOs are selling out their own country, and there's no one left to hold them morally responsible, which is the major problem this country now faces.
When did this begin, Dave? When did we start shipping all of our industry to China?
Yeah, well, the moral piece started in the 60s, right? And then, since the Enlightenment, there's been an attack on religion, et cetera. But the Chinese piece, you know, we made the bet early on, you know, maybe 40 years ago, that if we, you know, get that next generation of Chinese sons and daughters to be capitalists, they'll become liberal. It worked in a lot of other countries and settings. It never happened. We just underestimated the evil element inside the CCP. So we're not talking about the Chinese people. Xi Jinping just laid out 3 weeks ago or so, maybe 4 weeks, the essential ingredients of their new Communist Party plan at their 20th Communist Party meetings. Three parts, real quick. One, they said we're full-on Marxist-Leninist, meaning any China stuff is gone, right? Buddhist, Confucius ethics, gone. And those are good things, relatively speaking, compared to Marxist-Leninism, boy. Two, they got rid of their number two guy that mentioned just teeny market reforms, right? Some just incremental little market opening for future success. They said no. So basically, they're designing a zero growth economy. And then third, most problematic, they explicit war language. We're on war footing with you in the text. Get ready for the struggle sessions. Here comes war, right? Again, getting rid of Chinese language on peace and harmony which had been there for 20 years. So that's what's coming at us. And our CEOs are just, you know, walking down the hallway, no big deal.
Good grief. Okay, Dave, let's focus on something you were talking about in the beginning about China's economy breaking up, because this is one of those things, I mean, that's really what the special is about tonight. I talk about this all the time. I don't understand how they can continue to survive. I understand the world buys things from China, but when you're spreading that kind of money around the world and locking down your economy and doing militaries are hugely expensive things, how in the world are they still surviving?
Yeah, well, you know how big our debt problem is, right? Where our debt's about 125% of GDP. The UK just had a sovereign debt crisis, similar numbers. China's got 300% debt to GDP problems. So massive debt. And then on top of that, they got all the other stuff, right? They got the real estate crisis. They got credit crisis. They got ghost cities, they got bubbles all over the place, they got the COVID lockdowns, they got protests in the streets, et cetera. But to answer your question, how do they get away with it? Well, they got a $15 trillion economy and they have a 40% savings rate. That savings rate is 40% basically going to the government coffers. You can solve a lot of problems with 40% of $15 trillion in the short and even intermediate and maybe the long term, but their real economy now is showing signs, right, of decay. You can only build so many bullet trains and so many condo complexes, right? The next layer of investment and technological growth and entrepreneurship and innovation is harder to come by. You can only steal so many technological innovations from Boeing and our defense industry before you got to do it on your own. And the U.S., the CHIPS Act, and some of the CHIPS stuff that Biden has done to China is actually good. We really put the smackdown on them with CHIPS a little bit. So I think their days are numbered, right? The people are in the streets being heard for the first time ever in modern Chinese history. So that's a good sign.
Dave, what's a ghost city?
Yeah, they're just all over China. They're, you know, go out to YouTube and Google the China real estate bubble and the examples. But basically, they don't have a stock exchange where the Chinese can invest their retirements in bond markets like we have. So about, you know, 30% of their economy is the housing sector, because you buy 1, 2, 3 houses as your savings account, right? That's your long-term investment. And when China was growing at 8 or 9%, your asset just went up always, like, you know, before the 08 financial crisis here. So it was a prudent investment back then. The Chinese didn't know there was a bubble. And in the Evergrande case and all these real estate examples, what the firms do is the folks invest. They're not even going to live there, right? You have 3 homes. You only live in one. So the firms take that money and they start building the next project. And that all works until the music stops, right? Then the musical chairs and you got to find a place to sit. And so that's what's happening right now. The ghost cities are just the empty shells, and they could even survive without that until the music stopped, right? As investment vehicles, maybe it would have worked. But now it's investment vehicles and the people are going to the banks and saying, I want my money back. And they're not paying current mortgage payments on that real estate. So now the musical chairs music is started and they got no way out of it. So they're in a terrible predicament.
Dave, that makes me very nervous considering something you just said a couple minutes ago about China being on a war footing. Historically, a nation that's about to go through a debt crisis and have a bunch of civil unrest oftentimes finds excuses to send large armies overseas. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, we're looking at a serious problem, right? The RAND did a analysis probably about 6 months back in Bloomberg, it was reported. What we're looking at is if China attacks Hong Kong, that'll have a 5 to 10% GDP hit to the United States. Not the stock market. If we have a 5-10% GDP hit on our whole economy, you lose half your stock market immediately. And this is just for a 1-year hit. And then China takes a 30% GDP hit. So their GDP goes from 15 trillion to 10 trillion, and they got to feed 1.4 billion. So that's why they may not be able to pull this off. Plus, I don't think their military is all it's cracked up to be. They really don't have a blue water navy. They got one aircraft carrier. They do have the new high-speed missiles to hit us and do some damage. There's no doubt about that. And they got 1.4 billion people. But we'll see. You're right. We ought to worry. I think our folks are planning. The Russia war was a terrible strategic blunder on our part because it's taken our eyes off of our primary enemy, which is China. And we're wasting all sorts of precious resources on a war we never should have gotten in the middle of.
Dave, Brad, you were the best, man. I'll see you soon.
God bless you. Thanks, Jesse.
All right. We got final thoughts next. The coming collapse of China, whenever it comes, is dangerous. China being desperate is dangerous. It's not good. They have submarines in the water just like we do. They have over 1 billion people. That is a big deal. They have their eyes set on places like Hong Kong, Taiwan, maybe India. As you heard tonight, they're already fighting in some places in the Himalayas with the Indians. It is a situation that is ugly, especially because so much of the world, ourselves included, we are just intertwined with China, especially economically. We're going to live in some interesting times. All right, we'll do it again.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.